Peter. Peter is on fire here. You've been paying attention to our gospel lessons the last couple of weeks. You'll remember that Peter, along with the other disciples, had been barricaded in a room, hiding from the authorities in the wake of Jesus' execution. Peter didn't know what to do. He was confused. He was lost. He was scared. He might have been living in a post-resurrection world, but he was still acting like a pre-Easter person. Yes, he may have heard about the prophecies that Jesus' death was going to be part of a greater plan, that he'd be resurrected, that there'd be something new happening. But it didn't quite connect. And so he stayed behind the closed door. But now Peter is out healing people, and he's doing it in the name of the resurrected God. And he is taking names, and he is holding people to account. When the Sadducees, the religious establishment, want to know by what authority he is going around and healing people, he pulls no punches. He lays it on the line. I am doing it in the name of the one that you crucified, the resurrected one, Jesus. He tells them, you are going down a dead-end road. The only way to follow is Jesus. And he's clear about that. He says, Jesus is the only path to salvation. This is pretty bold, pretty aggressive. It's confident. And yet, in 21st century America, in our pluralistic society, it also can be a little bit troubling. What some of us might ask about people of other faiths or no faith, people who lead good lives. What about babies who die? Are they cut off from heaven? Are they not to be saved? Well, the church has had a little while to grapple with these questions and to think about them and their meaning. To consider that there might be a possible way forward in interpreting this text. One that doesn't leave us in an area of complete relativism where we say everything in every way is the same. Or another one where we say God has declared my way or the highway, this is it. And if you don't follow this path, you're out of luck. There's a third way that suggests that we who follow Jesus are taking advantage of an opportunity to experience God in a distinctive and unique way. And my hope this morning had been to explore this concept with you, to take us deeper into the text, to not be lost in an argument about theological abstractions, but instead to spend some time understanding what it would mean for us to be bold, confident disciples in the model of Peter. And that was my plan. The moment I looked at the lectionary readings for today, I knew that was where I wanted to go. And I prayed on the text, and I read my commentaries. And then on Friday morning, I received an email. An email about the murder of Natalie Perriello. And I, like many others, was stunned and shocked and saddened and angered. I reached out to Nan Parsons, a member of our congregation and the principal of our high school, to see if I might be able to offer any assistance. If you read this morning's Valley News, you know that a number of people were at the school yesterday to offer support and counsel. Representatives from WISE and Second Growth, including Robert, and a pastor from a local church. And that was me. And I tell you this not because I am looking for any recognition, any pat on the back for doing the right thing, but because I want to invite you to come to this place where I find myself right now. Ever since I got the news, and yesterday when I walked into the school, I've been grappling with the meaning of this. And when I drove away from the building yesterday, I felt something was very, very wrong. I should not be here. Don't get me wrong. I felt incredibly blessed and privileged that anybody thought I might be able to offer even a modicum of support to anybody in the midst of such a tragedy. No, I should not have been there, I thought, because things like this should not be happening. Talk about the timing. Last week, we spent time talking about abuse and the things that we as a community can do to help combat that abuse by getting conversation of it out into the open where we can begin to confront it. Today, we're going to have the opportunity to talk about ways we can respond to crises to help teens who are at risk. And if my counting is correct, this is the 14th premeditated death involving a handgun in New Hampshire this year. And those deaths have occurred in a concentrated period of time. I am not up here today to give you a sermon about gun control. Jesus says absolutely nothing about the Second Amendment. The gospel has nothing to tell us about the jurisprudence of the right to bear arms. But mark my words, something is wrong. And we need to talk about it. Not just those of us gathered here in this church today, but we as a community and as a society. We cannot shy away in the church from hard conversations, fearing that people might think we're getting political or that we might alienate somebody. If that is our fear, we need to learn how to listen to one another. Now, as many of you know, I grew up outside of New York City, in the kind of white bread suburb that sitcom writers love. Dull and boring. The closest I ever got to a gun was four doors down the street when I'd go visit my friend Wendy. And we'd go down to the rec room and I would see her dad's gun cabinet with his hunting rifles proudly and very securely displayed. That was it. I've never gone hunting. I've never been in an inner city. I've never been deployed. I've seen guns on the hips of cops. I've seen soldiers with them, but that's it. So at one level, I'll confess, I don't get it. I don't know why people want them. I can hear about it. I can speculate. I know there are people who enjoy target practice, who enjoy going out into the woods, bagging some game, and then preparing what they've caught. But the motivations are so varied, and we see that through the news and the stories and the things people do. And we can't shy away from it. We can't say what has happened here in New Hampshire is unusual. This doesn't happen here. The implication being that it does happen somewhere else. The big city, communities where people look different than us. No, it does happen here. Violence does erupt because people in New Hampshire are like people everywhere else. They're complicated. They're good. They're bad. They want to help. They want to hurt. We can trot out trite phrases, statistics, make arguments from one side or the other. But we need to go deeper. You can tell me guns don't kill people. People kill people. That is a factually correct statement. My dog doesn't shoot a gun. The computer doesn't shoot the gun. A person has to pull the trigger. But the tool is in somebody's hand. And some tools can cause more damage than others. Don't tell me a knife is the same as a gun. George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin would tell you it is not the same. Don't tell the students at Columbine High School a gun is the same as fists. It's not. Don't tell Ronald Reagan, who was shot by a deranged fan of a movie star. These are people using a tool, an object that in and of itself is neutral. But it is one that is put in the hands of people who are not always thoughtful or rational. And the description of not thoughtful or rational is one that can be applied to any of us in this room. We can have the moment of anger. Things can go off track. So what's the motivation? Maybe it's a sense of power, a desire to exert some control in a world that seems increasingly out of control, where things are ever more complicated, where we have trouble feeling that we're on top of the situation, indeed, sometimes that we can't even understand it. But that kind of power, that kind of control that we're trying to exercise is illusory. And the flip side is fear. Somehow I'm going to protect myself. I'm going to keep the bad people away. And yet the stories we keep hearing and reading involving guns that people have had in their homes have involved a child who is accidentally shot, a spouse who is killed, a series of events unfolding that no one had ever wanted to see. This fear is something we try to keep at bay. And yet look at the world around us. We try to respond to fear with violence, and the fear doesn't go away. Instead, it tightens its grip on us. It works deeper into our hearts and our souls. And the powers and principalities we read about in Scripture, those forces that oppose God's love, gain ground and become more powerful. We began this morning's service by reading the 23rd Psalm. A psalm whose words provide comfort and consolation to so many. In words that have been shared throughout the ages by Christians and Jews, by people who are seeking assurance that in a time of darkness and loneliness, God was present. And we still share these words today because we know they are true. God is our ever-present, ever-faithful consolation, walking through the dark places of life with us. But there is a flip side to this companionship, and we see it in the lectionary. We see it in Acts, where we recognize that we have been called, that each of us has given a vocation by God to go forth and share the good news of God's love. And to do so, even when it takes us out of our comfort zone, even when we have to do things we may not want to do, even when we have to stir the pot and maybe get in trouble. We are called to be bold disciples in the model of Peter. We are called to share the gospel of God's love, of God, come to us in Jesus. And what was it that Jesus did when he was confronted with fear and violence? We hear in John 10, I have not been forced to lay down myself for others. I choose to do it. That is what it means for Jesus to be the good shepherd. When Jesus was confronted with the armed might and power of the Roman state, with the religious establishment of his own people, with disciples who sought revolution. He turned away from violence and chose a different way. He chose the way of the cross. And in doing so, wanted us to understand that darkness cannot be overwhelmed by darkness, but only by light. That fear cannot be vanquished by fear, but only by hope. That hate is never extinguished by hate, but only through love. This is the gospel. That Peter left that room to proclaim. This is the gospel that you and I are called to share with faith and hope and charity and confidence.